Hello and welcome to episode 48 of the Two Guys Who Consult podcast. My name is Matt Leach, also known as Leachman. And with me as always is my friend and co-host, Jeremy J. Monster Fowler.
Hello.
How are you doing?
How about you?
Yeah, not bad, thanks, mate. Not bad. Just having a cup of tea this time while trying to stay warm in the depths of winter, although we're coming out of it now. So hopefully
slowly but surely, but it's still only early February.
True, because it's still snow. Oh, God, it's just depressed myself. Anyway, let's get into some gaming news, I think. Do you want to go first?
Okay, yeah. The only bit I've got is Nintendo have made some announcements about numbers. They've announced that the Switch 2 has sold over 17 million consoles since its first release last June. And they also announced some other numbers. Yeah, it's awesome. The sell-through rate is incredible.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've also announced that Mario Kart World has sold 14.25. Then, of course, an awful lot of those will be the bundle.
Yeah, I mean, we both did the bundle, didn't we, with the Mario Kart? Yeah.
I think a lot of people did.
Yeah, it made sense to do it, really. But yeah, I mean, it's going from strength to strength, and what's coming out on it this year? Resident Evil Requiem coming out at the end of the month. Has Elden Ring released on it?
Same day as the other platforms.
Has Elden Ring released on it yet?
Elden Ring's not out yet. It's got a 2026 tentative release date, but they haven't narrowed it down more than that. It got delayed.
Because Star Wars Outlaws is out on it, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's kind of going from strength to strength, really. So just waiting for the next big first-party title to come on it, really, which I don't know what's going to be. Hopefully a 3D Mario announcement, but we'll see.
Well, yeah, that'd be good. But there's a third party, or whatever they call it, partner direct tomorrow, the day after a recording. But of course, there's no first party stuff in that.
No, so it'll just be third party stuff. Well, we'll just see what comes out of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's half an hour, so we'll see what they announce. They did announce some game numbers of sales, and Nintendo only talk about games that have sold a million, or at least a million. And depressingly, Kirby Air Riders has sold 1.7.
Yeah, well, that's not much more than the original, is it?
It was about 700,000 more, but yeah. And Metroid Prime 4 was very conspicuous by its absence because it's not mentioned, which means it's not even got to a million sales yet.
Yeah, and it's been, what, over a month and... Well, 2 months, actually. 2 months today.
Yeah, because it came out in December, didn't it? Yeah.
4th of December it came out, yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. Don't know, maybe it was... I mean, in Metroid... series has never sold in great numbers, has it, across all the Nintendo consoles?
No, but then Metroid Dread sold 3 million copies.
Yeah.
So I think people just sort of presumed that Prime 4 would continue that upward trend and do well off the back of Dread, and it seems like a lot of people that bought Dread haven't jumped in with Prime 4.
But like you say, you're not that keen on the 2D style Metroid. You much prefer the 3D one, don't you? So there could be a lot of people like you who feel the same way or vice versa. You never know. It might crack a million sales in the next few months. Who knows?
Mm.
Weird that they don't. Why not? It's your IP. Why not just release the sales numbers? What's the big deal?
Because it's not sold a million. Won't talk about it unless it sells a million.
Stupid.
It's just very Nintendo, isn't it?
Nintendo will Nintendo.
Yeah. So what have you got this week, mate?
So the first one I've got is there was a rumour that there was going to be no physical version to start with of GTA 6. Take-Two's CEO has come out and said that is not the plan.
No.
So apparently he said in a recent interview, let's have a look, that's not the plan. A brief but sharp rebuttal of the prior reporting. So if you're keen on getting your actual hands on a copy of GTA 6 day one, you should be in luck. So yeah, that's all he really said was that it's not the plan. So they obviously, I mean, why wouldn't release a physical version? I mean, it's been a kind of a trend of some games where a physical version has come out a couple of months after a digital version.
Yeah, I'd be absolutely shocked if GTA did that.
Yeah, I'd be absolutely really shocked. I mean, doesn't make sense for them, does it?
No.
As it's coming out on Xbox and PlayStation to start with, and then probably PC later on down the line. But he heard it from the man himself that it should there will be a physical version. At least he hasn't explicitly said that it's been going to come out day one release, but I don't see why it wouldn't really.
No, I mean, I'd be less shocked if there was no Xbox physical, because Xbox seem to be moving away from physical more than PlayStation are.
Definitely. Definitely.
There's quite a few Xbox Series X games that don't have disc versions.
Yeah. Yeah, they like you to have like a digital version, don't they?
Yeah.
Especially with the way that they're going to be going moving forward with like a, you know, Xbox Anywhere kind of plan.
Yeah.
Kind of makes sense, doesn't it? They want you to have digital versions.
I mean, wouldn't be surprised if this new Xbox, whatever it's called, that's supposed to be like a PC hybrid, doesn't have a disc drive.
Yeah. Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either. And the other bit of news I've got is a little retailer, video game retailer called Game, is closing all its remaining brick and mortar stores, which apparently there's only three left in
the country. I was going to say all three of them.
All three of them. And the three are one in Dudley.
Dudley.
One in Lancaster.
Right.
And one in Sutton.
Oh, okay.
They're the three remaining standalone game stores which are going to be closing down.
So I wonder if those three towns don't have a Sports Direct.
Probably don't. Because it goes on to say that the ones that are in Sports Direct or House of Fraser are still going to be trading as normal.
Yeah, and the website's going to carry on as well, isn't it?
The website will carry on as normal. But as we know, they don't take trades in anymore. They stopped their reward scheme. So
yeah,
the only reason to go to a game really is if you wanted a brand new copy from a physical store.
Yeah.
But they don't just do video games anymore. They do all sorts of crap like
Funko Pops.
Funko Pops and toys and all kinds of shit. So
yeah, I mean, they used to be big on Amiibo at one point when the Amiibo trend or fad was big, but because it's kind of died a death anymore, I don't think you can get Amiibo in anymore either.
I've been into a game for quite some time.
Right.
There's one in the Trafford Centre in the Sports Direct in there, but I haven't bothered. There's no reason for me to go in there, really.
No.
So, but yeah, a bit of a shame to.
It is.
Quite a lot of time in the early to mid to late 90s in game, trying out when they did the demonstration booths and all that lot, trying out games and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And the staff were always really enthusiastic about the latest kinds of games because they were gamers themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But you go into a game store now, it's just people just sat behind the till just selling stuff. So they're not really into games that much.
Yeah.
CX, that's where you're going to go now. Although they rely on traded in stuff.
I was going to say, not for new stuff, you're not. But
so yeah, it's a bit of a shame. End of an era. Brick and mortar stores for game. So that leads us into what we've been playing.
Right, yeah.
I'll go first on this one, yeah, because I've been playing a fair amount of Red Dead Redemption again, which I will talk about in Platinum Watch.
Nice.
So we'll talk about that there.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I've been playing is, although it's out on Friday, I've been playing the Neo 3 demo. It's really good.
Yeah.
Like, it's really good.
I thought this demo you had to be online at certain times to be able to play it. Is that right?
No, you can play it whenever.
All right, cool.
It's the first area of the game.
Right, yeah.
About 6 to 8 hours worth of content.
That's cool. That's pretty good for a demo.
For a demo, it's pretty good.
Mm.
Right. No, I'm not ashamed to say I needed help with Neo 1 and Neo 2. As in walkthroughs, tips and tricks on how to beat bosses, that kind of stuff. Pretty much from day one.
Mm-hmm.
I went into Neo 3 not looking at any walkthroughs, not looking at any footage. I just booted it up and played it.
Right.
And I got to the first boss, and it took me, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 attempts to beat the first boss.
Okay.
Which ain't too bad for me.
Yeah.
And I beat it. And then that's when it goes into like the open world area.
Right.
So the open world area, it's kind of like, I don't know, what can you compare it to? It's kind of like a much scaled down version of like Elden Ring.
I was going to say, I've watched some reviews and it looked a bit like Elden Ring.
Yeah, kind of. Basically, the open world area is when you go into an area, you can find different things as you progress through the area. You know, a la Elden Ring, like little things pop up on your map, like enemy bases, shrines, points of interest, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So it kind of borrows from that. The high, medium, and low stances are gone from the first two games.
Right.
So now you have a samurai stance where you've got all the samurai gear and samurai weapons and all that lot.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got the ninja stance.
Yeah, and you can swap between them at a push
swap between them at any time. Yeah.
Right.
There's actually a game mechanic where if you swap between them at a certain time, it does like a burst counter on an enemy if they've got that ability.
That's cool.
So they can damage them doing that, which is pretty cool. So you've effectively, you're balancing two different builds at the same time, a samurai build and a ninja build.
Yeah, and ninja doesn't have any stamina, right?
That's right. So it's a bit weird because on the ninja build, I keep doing what they call a key pulse, which is where you time it exactly right to restore your key. But you can only do that in the samurai stance. If you do it in the ninja stance, it does like a little ghost of himself, goes through the enemy and goes behind the enemy so you can do an attack behind the enemy. So I got so into the habit of doing key pulses for Neo 1 and 2, it's really hard to get out of that habit doing it as samurai only, which is a bit weird. Well, I will get used to it.
Mm.
But I haven't seen any new weapons as yet. Still all the weapons from Neo 1 in there, dual swords, axe, katana, kasurigama, tonfu, the claws, they're all there.
From what I've seen, it's the previous weapons come back again, but some are set to samurai now, and some are set to ninja, is that right?
That's right, yeah. That's right. So, yeah.
You've got the heavy-hitting ones are all samurai, and your fast ones are the ninja ones.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. That's exactly right. But it works pretty well so far. I've played about 3 or 4 hours of the demo, actually.
Yeah, apparently the whole game's about 60 hours.
Yeah, I mean, which is about right for a Neo game. I think I put I put in a good like 120 hours into the first Neo, I think it was.
Right.
That was to fully complete it. And the second Neo, I can't remember how many hours I put into it, but it was like it must have been nearly 200 hours, crazy amount of hours.
Yeah.
So good game, great games though, really good. Yeah. That's why I'm gonna enjoy Neo 3. I mean, I got the physical version coming, so it should be in the post box on Friday.
Yeah, and you can transfer your save from your demo as well, can't you?
That's right, yeah. The progress carried over to the full game, which is good. So, yeah, that's all I've been playing this week. What about you?
Cool. So I've done a bit more progress on your Ghost of Yote, your favourite.
Hurrah.
And I've enjoyed what I've been doing. I was a bit, I don't know if taken aback is the right phrase, but the whole thing, but when you're with this samurai,
yeah,
like 20 minutes in, she realizes is her brother.
That's right, yeah.
And I know the whole sort of thing, the plot is that she thought her brother was dead.
That's right.
But I can't help but feel that even though they're both adults and they've not seen each other for like 15 years, you would recognize your brother earlier than she actually does.
Yeah, but what you got to remember, and this is the way I kind of reasoned it, was that she's full of revenge.
Yeah.
So she may be blinded by her emotions to recognize him. That's the way I kind of thought of that.
Right.
Okay. Emotional state, not like a female emotional state, but you know what I mean. So she's going through some stuff.
Yeah. And so I did that bit with him, and then he leaves you in the village, and then I met another master.
Yeah.
Who taught me the Yara.
Yeah, which is the spear.
As I say, it looks like a bow staff, but with a spike on the end, so it's a spear.
Actually, a spear.
And you have to spear 5 fish to get a trophy.
That's right. Yeah.
And it only let me do 4.
Yeah, when you're doing the tutorial bit of it, I only let you do 4. So you have to seek out the 5th one, which you can find fish pretty much anywhere where there's like a lake, you'll find fish. So it's not too difficult.
So I had a quick look about that same sort of area where I was doing the tutorials, trying to find the bit with the fish again, and couldn't find any. So I just sort of ended up moving on again in the end.
Yeah. I mean, you can get it at any time. So there's 3 or 4 weapons that you can get from masters. There's the spear, what you've got.
I think there's 4, isn't
it? I think there's 4, yeah. The Kasurigama, the Odachi, and the Jewel Swords. Is it the Jewel Swords?
Jewel Blades.
Yeah.
Or Jewel Katanas, whatever they're called. So I've got the Jewel Katanas, I've got the Katana, I've got the Yara. There's like one more slot left.
Yeah, I think that's the Kasurigama.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure where the master is for that one yet, but I'll find that.
Yeah, you find him later on. I think he's up in the north somewhere.
Right, okay. But yeah, I'm still still playing it and really enjoying it. Just haven't made masses and masses of progress yet. But I have to. The thing is that it's a bit daft. When I play it, I really enjoy it. Yeah. But I have to remind myself to actually play the damn thing.
Yeah.
So I'm still on with that. That's ongoing.
Yep.
And Aston, who I console share with, very kindly bought Dispatch for us.
Oh, nice.
And I consumed this game.
You did? You did it like 2 days?
2 days, yeah. It took me 9 hours in total to do all 8 episodes.
Wow.
I did 5 hours on the first day, had to go to bed, and then did 4 hours on the second day, and it was done.
And what did you think of it?
It's incredible.
Yeah. I thought you might say that. I mean, we've talked about it briefly before and that we probably will play it. And now you finally played it and you completed it. And it was like, wow, you could have did it in 2 days.
Yeah. So if I had played it last year, it would have been my number 3.
Oh, cool.
That's how good it is. The writing is just super good. Like, I can't praise the writing enough. It's like a playable TV show. That's how good it is.
I think when I saw a review, that's pretty much what they said about it. You know, it reminds me a lot of Invincible, like the art style.
Right, yeah.
Kind of. I mean, I don't know if it's as graphic as Invincible. I know some bits are. But...
I mean, there's nudity and violence, etc., because the Switch version is censored, unfortunately.
Yes, a bit of a hoo-ha about that, isn't there?
So apparently the censor is to do with Japanese guidelines. And apparently Nintendo don't let you submit, because it's got no physical, it's all digital game, they don't let you submit multiple versions for the different regions. So because the version they submitted has to be censored for Japan, it censors everywhere else as well.
Right, that makes more sense.
Yeah. So if you want to see some boobies and some graphic violence, don't play the Switch version.
Yeah, fair enough. I do want to play this because, I mean, it is right episodic game. I love an episodic game.
You really should. It is so good.
I should play it.
Like I say, it's not a long game. There's 8 episodes, and I did it in 9 hours over 2 days.
Yeah.
I was going to say to you, you could blitz through it before Neo 3 comes out, but I know you're not out of time to do that in the end. But if you do want a bit of a palate cleanser at some point, I'm pretty sure you could finish it over a weekend.
Yeah, I've got it on my wish list on the PlayStation, so yeah, I will play it at some stage.
£28, and then they did put it on sale over Christmas, and they put it down to like £26. It's like £2 off. Come on.
Yeah, you need a bit more of a discount than that.
Yeah.
It's got Aaron Paul in it as well, hasn't it?
He's the lead.
He's like the lead. Yeah.
But the whole voice cast is super good. Laura Bailey is one of the main female characters.
Yeah.
I forget, there's another lass, Erin Yvette.
Mm-hmm.
She was Blonde Blazer, and she was super good. I mean, everyone in the game is just of a very high quality for voice acting. You can also switch the QuickTime events off. So I did.
Yep. So when if you switch them off, they just play through.
Yeah, like, it just plays. So there's no like press X, not die. And you can, the sensor that's happened on the Switch version, if you want that on the PlayStation, there is an option to switch it off. So you can switch off nudity and switch off like the visual swearing, whatever they call it.
Oh, right. Basically,
if someone gives you a middle finger, that's blurred out as well.
Oh, right. Interesting.
I don't know why you would censor any of that. Like, I'm
why,
an adult.
Why would you?
Like, don't protect me.
Yeah. Well, at least it's there if people do want to get play through it and not have like a, you know, offensive version, quote unquote.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty early in the year right now, but I'm fairly certain, unless some miraculous 5 game comes out that bumps it out of there, I'm pretty sure it's going to figure on my top 5 list for 2026.
Nice. Cool. Look forward to playing that one then.
Yeah, definitely should.
Yeah. What else have you been playing?
And then the other one I've got, Mike and I have carried on with our Pasta Pad playthrough of Metroid Prime Remasters.
Yep.
And we got to the Omega Pirate.
Yep.
Instantly, as soon as I saw the arena, like something twigged in my brain, and I got some form of like Metroid Prime PTSD, and I was like, no!
Oh dear.
It's the bit. And we died a lot.
Yeah.
And then we came back to it at a later point when we had a strategy, and I died, and he died, and I died, and he died, until eventually it was his turn, and he did it. So it still means I have not physically got the monkey off my back myself.
No.
I was there in the room when he did it. And so at least we've got past it now, and I can see the rest of this game that I've never seen, because I never got past this bit on the GameCube.
I'm interested to see how you do up against Ridley.
Oh yeah, that's going to be a nightmare. I mean, I'm trying to think. I reckon we're like 75% through at this point.
Yeah, you're quite a ways into it now. Yeah, not got that long left.
Because we just got the radiation suit or phazon suit, whatever it's called.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any more upgrades to get after that one.
The problem I had with it, well, not problem really, was those bloody ghost versions of the pirates. You know, I really didn't enjoy doing that bit. Like, no. You know, you have to change to a certain visor, don't you, to be able to see them.
Yeah, it's like the X-ray visor or something like that.
Yeah, every time I was like, oh, this again.
Mm-hmm.
That was the only, downside. But I'm glad you've made it past the Omega Prior anyway. So yeah. Hopefully you'll get to see the end boss.
That would be cool. Yeah. The Metro Prime, who's not as hard as Meta Ridley.
Well, I found Ridley harder than the final boss for me, but I know
you're not the only person who told me that.
No, but I know somebody who played the original GameCube version, and he never defeated the Metroid Prime.
Oh, really?
He just couldn't do it. He got right to the end of the game, and he could not defeat it.
Well, also, aren't these last two back to back? Don't you do Meta Ridley and then straight onto Metroid Prime?
Pretty much, yeah. It's almost back to back. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
But he was the same chap who also couldn't defeat Father Gascoigne in Bloodborne.
No,
he said he tried and he tried and he tried and he tried and just could not beat him. So
should have got some help.
Yeah.
Multiplayer is the way to play those games, especially if you need help.
Definitely. I mean, that's a good thing about Neo 3, just going back to it quickly, is that you've got the option to call in like the computer-controlled characters that help you, but also you can call people in and do co-op, which is really good as well.
Yeah, that's cool. I mean, if and it's a very big if, I do end up getting it, I'll of course give you a shout, try and play some multiplayer.
Yeah.
Cool. One thing I have heard about this is allegedly a little bit easier than 1 and 2.
Apparently the difficulty has been dropped down a little bit compared to the first two games, which I mean, I think the reason they've done that is because of the open world. I mean, don't get me wrong, I still died like 7 or 8 times to that first boss. Yeah. So I'd say quote unquote a little bit easier, but I found with the original Neo getting through those first few areas was tough. It was hard.
Well, yeah, like the first game, I don't think I got past the first boss.
Yeah, the first boss took me forever until I got help, and then I defeated the first boss. And I found with Neo 1, the more you advanced, the quote unquote easier it got, because the stronger you got. Same with Neo 2, it was the same thing. Like the first area was really hard. And then once you got over that bit of difficulty and got your build going, it got quote unquote easier. So, you know, making it, I think they're probably trying to make it a bit more accessible for people, especially it being like semi-open world. I'd call it semi-open world because you explore an area as opposed to a massive sprawling map, like something like Assassin's Creed Shadows or, you know, one of the Assassin's Creed games.
Yeah.
So I'll report back on when I played some more this weekend. But yeah, I'm glad you got through the Omega Pirate fight. Well done.
Yeah, thanks. So I passed that on to my flatmate.
Pass it on to Mike. So that's it for what we've been playing, and it takes into Retro Corner. So I'll let you go first on this one.
Okay. So this week, and again, I'm holding up to the camera, which the listeners can't see, is Red Steel 2. And this game is night and day better than the one I talked about last week from launch.
Right, okay. So what's so different about it?
So it released in 2009.
Yeah.
It's got Motion Plus capability, and the Motion Plus is not optional. You have to have the Motion Plus add-on to play this game. If you haven't got Motion Plus, it won't play.
I think I had Motion Plus for my original Wii remotes, and then I got a Wii Motion Plus built in with the...
The Zelda.
Skyward Sword? Yeah, Skyward Sword. The gold one. The gold one.
That's the one I'm using at the moment.
Yeah.
Because I have got some add-ons to put onto my other Wii remotes if I wanted to use them, but considering I've got one that's got it built in, I was like, I'm just going to use that one.
Yeah, use that one. It's easier.
And I think I've played hours and hours of this, but it's got a cel-shaded graphic style, which is much different from the first one.
Yeah.
And in fact, it's not linked to the first one in any way. I don't really know why it's called Red Steel 2. Other than
like a separate game, isn't it?
Yeah. Other than just try and capitalize on whatever sort of hype or marketing I think the first game had, I don't really know why it's called Red Steel 2. But like the cel shaded look holds up a lot better than the first game did.
Yeah, I bet it does. It's a bit like there was a game called 13, which had like a cel shaded look.
Yeah, Matt loves that game.
Yeah, I played it back in the day when they did a remaster of it a few years back.
Right.
And a remake. Yeah. Which I haven't played, but yeah, sorry. Carry on with Red Steel 2.
Yeah, so you play a cowboy samurai.
Yeah.
Who is unnamed, and he's the last member of the Kuzugari clan.
Yeah.
The rest of your clan have all been killed.
Oh. That's unfortunate.
But the jackals, the bad guys in this game, have killed the rest of your clan.
Right.
And the game starts with you being tied to the back of a motorbike and then trying to kill you by dragging you across the desert. And over the course of that cutscene, you sort of manage to get out and like get yourself free. And then you've lost your sword while they've been dragging you across the desert.
Wow.
And so you shoot the jackal with the bike
because
you've somehow still got your gun. Mm. And then you have to like sort of obtain a katana again.
Yeah.
And then once you've got the katana, you can swap between sword fighting and guns at will.
Right.
The sword fighting is all one-to-one. So you can do your stabs, you can, you know, upward slash, sideways slash, like diagonal. And what you do is mirrored exactly with the sword on screen.
Right. Okay.
So the way it feels compared to the first game is much better.
Yeah. It sounds like it's better controlled.
Mm.
Yeah.
The only thing that's a bit of a shame, so this second game didn't sell very well.
Yeah.
I think it sold like about half of what the first game sold.
Right.
So the second game sales were like 250,000.
Wow, that's not a lot of copies, is it?
No, and I've seen an Ubisoft video clip thing explaining why it sold so few, because they weren't able to bundle the Motion Plus in with the game.
Yeah.
So you've got to have people that are interested in the first game probably be interested in the second game.
Yeah.
And then if you've got like a Venn diagram, and then you've got like, and of those people, the amount of people that have got the Motion Plus that are able to actually play it.
Yeah.
And so you're dwindling your audience down and down and down.
Yeah.
And so that's why it only sold 250,000. So there was never any more games in the series released after this one.
No, probably it didn't sell enough, did it?
No, Red Steel 2 was it.
Yeah.
And I've seen people say that it'd be really good, like if they could bring it, do a Red Steel 3 and bring it to like VR.
Yeah.
It would probably work really well on modern VR systems with the cell shading and where the one-to-one sword fighting works and stuff like that.
Yeah, it probably would do, to be honest, I think.
Mm, but whether they actually will, I don't know.
No. Hmm, interesting.
It cost me £4 off eBay after last
week. eBay, yeah. Not Music Magpie, this one, then.
No, it wasn't, thankfully, because it actually arrived. I think it was from an individual dude. I'm very reticent to use Music Magpie again, considering that I tried to get someone a copy of Super Smash Bros. Ultimate for Christmas from them, and they apparently sent two copies, which never arrived, and a month later they finally admitted, like, maybe they've both been lost in the post.
Hmm.
Have a refund then, please.
Nightmare. So you never actually got that game, did you?
Not from them, no. I bought it from CEX in the end, because they actually had someone in, and then gave that as the present instead.
Yeah, fair enough.
But yeah, this one was from like an individual seller dude, and it arrived pretty quickly.
That's good.
And I don't know, it's like 6 to 8 hours. I don't know if I'll play the whole thing, because it's still a motion game. You have to play it stood up because of the whole like one-to-one thing. So it's not really a game you can play to relax after work. You have to be ready to stand up and wave around and all that kind of malarkey. But the sword fighting is fairly complex, considering it's a, you know, a Wii game.
Yeah.
You have to do like wide swings if you've got like enemies with armor. There's some enemies that you have to do like a stab motion for. It's stuff like that to keep it sort of varied. And the sword fighting is actually really fun.
Mm, cool. That sounds like a decent purchase for £4 anyway.
It definitely was.
Yeah.
What's yours this week?
So my retro pick for this week is Duke Nukem 3D on the PC.
All right, cool.
Because last week it celebrated its 30th anniversary.
Oh, geez.
29th of January, 1996, it came out.
Right.
Now, I didn't play it fully on its release because I didn't actually have a PC at that time. Right. I got one a little bit later in 1996 because that was my second year at uni. 95, 94. Yeah, second year at uni. So
14, 15.
Yeah, I know. So I saw it at my friend's house, my mate called James. We went to college together. And he went to a different university to me. But I think I came back over the January break or one of the weekends I came back. Mm-hmm. Went around his house and he showed me Duke Nukem 3D and I was like in awe of it. I mean, absolutely in awe of it. because, I mean, 30 years ago, so the graphics at the time were really impressive. Mm. Now, Duke Nukem 3D is the third game in this series because I never actually played the original Duke Nukem or Duke Nukem 2,
right,
which were platform, side-scrolling platform shoot-em-up games.
Yeah.
And that was the original premise.
So a bit like Contra?
A little bit.
Yeah.
So Duke Nukem 3D was a fully 3D game. And are like, you know, Doom, Quake, etc. And there's actually references made to Doom and Quake in the Duke Nukem 3D game because Duke Nukem 3D is very much a product of its time, mid-90s, very much so. You know, you've got, what was the famous saying from it? It's time to kick ass and chew bubble gum and I'm all out of gum. That was one of the, like, the phrases. Well,
yeah. I mean, he took that from They Live. Which would be up in that John Carpenter movie that's got Roddy Rudd Piper as the lead character, and they just literally just ripped it off. And
that's right. They admitted to it. They took a lot of lines from a lot of different movies, like Evil Dead, and other movies as well. So yeah, very much a self-referential character, Duke Nukem. But it was just fun to play, you know, and it was very tongue-in-cheek. And I remember completing it on the PC, and I did enjoy it quite a lot at the time. It was one of the first PC games that I actually played, along with World of Warcraft 2, I think it was.
Mm.
Yeah. So those are the first, like, my first two proper PC games that I played on the PC.
Right. Sorry, I was going to say, remind me, there was a PS1 version of this game.
Yeah, well, I mean, let me rattle off the versions that they did in the original kind of release schedule. It came out on... Let's have a look.
So did it come out on PS1 same time as you were playing the PC version?
PC version came out in January. The PS1 version didn't come out until December of the following year.
All right, that long.
So, yeah, beginning of December 1997.
Right, okay.
Because there was also, hold your horses, there was a game.com version, whatever that means.
Right.
There was a Mac OS version.
Mm.
This is in order of release. There was a Saturn version. Remember the Sega Saturn? Didn't last very long.
No, I didn't. I didn't have one. In fact, I barely knew anyone that had one anyway, because Sega of Japan, in their wisdom, released a 32-bit console that couldn't really do 3D.
Yeah, exactly.
They didn't think 3D was going to take off, so they concentrated on 2D capabilities.
Yeah. There was a Nintendo 64 version.
Right. Never played it.
Yeah, no me. There's a PlayStation version, which you already mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Mega Drive Genesis version, which was programmed but not released until 2015.
What?
I know.
I can't imagine the Mega Drive could even run it.
I didn't think it could.
No. But
apparently there was a version programmed. There was an Xbox 360 version, which came out in 2008.
Right.
They did an iOS version in 2009.
Okay.
There was an Android version in 2011.
Right.
And then they kind of remixed a version called the Megaton Edition, which came out on Windows and Mac OS in 2013. There's a Linux version, which also came out in 2013. They released a PlayStation 3 and a PlayStation Vita version in 2015. And then there was the 20th Anniversary World Tour Edition, which was the last version that I played, which was Windows, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One, which came out in 2016. And the Switch version came out in 2020. So that's all the different platforms. Yes, a lot of different versions. But the original one on the PC was, like, you know, it was absolute. Because I played Doom, I played Wolfenstein 3D,
mm-hmm.
And there were a few games that came out between Doom and Duke Nukem 3D, like Star Wars Dark Forces, which I never played. Hexen, which I never played, Descent, which I never played. So there was quite a few different first-person shooters that came out, but not any that I, because I didn't have a PC, that I played, and I think I had my SNES at the time. So which Doom was on the SNES, as we said before. But when I saw Duke Nukem 3D on a PC, I was like, I've got to play this game. I've got to have a PC. That's the whole reason why I bought a PC. Was for Duke Nukem and other games, but pretty much for Duke Nukem, really. Wow. But yeah, it's very linear game. You play through a level. It was one of the first games, because I'll put a link in the description to use like a cityscape, because before it was just like hell, a la Hexen or Doom, or, you know, some like industrialized version, a big warehouse like in Quake. That's kind of, you didn't really see like a cityscape. And this was kind of one of those games. They also, their quote unquote boast was that you could look up and down in Duke Nukem 3D, which you couldn't do in Doom.
Right, yeah.
It was very much like when you looked up and looked down, it kind of skewed the look of the level as you were looking. So kind of worked. But like I say, I'll put a link in the description. It's only like a 10-minute video of them just talking about the release of the game 30 years ago. But yeah, very enjoyable. I recommend playing it if you've not played it's available on plenty of platforms. You can play with PS4 on PS5. So, and I think I played the Vita version as well. Right. So it works pretty well on those platforms. But yeah, really good first-person shooter, a lot of fun to play.
Nice.
So yeah, that was my retro pick for this week.
Cool.
Which brings us me into Platinum Watch, I guess, or us into Platinum Watch. I got the platinum for Red Dead Redemption.
Hey, well done.
Oh my God. Why? I've talked about it last week, but why did I decide to do this? When in my brain was this a good idea?
Because we've discussed you're a masochist.
I guess I must be, but 82 hours it's taken me to this platinum. I think the best part of it was, because back in the day, I never 100%ed the original game or the Undead Nightmare. I just never did. It just wasn't something I was interested in doing.
Right.
So doing the 100% for the main game and the Undead Nightmare, it got more out of it, because it forces you to do the challenges. It forces you to, you know, do things in quote unquote unconventional ways that you wouldn't think about doing. Like one of the challenges is there's a tomahawk challenge where you have to use the tomahawks to kill zombies, or you can do it in the main game where you can attack a hideout and kill people only using a tomahawk, that kind of thing. It's not something you would have done originally. No. So that was the best part of it, was like exploring more of the game than what I actually did originally. Probably, like I said last week, I broke the back of it by doing the 100% of the original game, because that's what took the most amount of time, because there's so much to do. The Undead Nightmare, not so much, but again, you're at the mercy of RNG in the Undead Nightmare. You have to get the four horses of the apocalypse. I had three of them, and the last one, which is the horse of death, or just called death, I actively sought it out, and I was roaming around for, it must have been 2-3 hours over a couple of days, and I just could not find it no matter where I looked. So I decided to move on to something else, and as soon as I did that, 5 minutes later, the horse spawned. I'm like...
Typical.
I'm like, what? I've been actively looking for this thing, and then I go and do something else, and it just appears. I was like...
One of those things that when you look for something, it never...
I know.
That's, not doing it straight
that's
there.
A lot of the game. That's a lot of Red Dead and the Undead Nightmare, is you're actively looking for something and you just cannot find it. You move on to something else, and then it just like appears randomly. It's so weird.
Yeah.
But no, I got all the, because you actually become the undead version of John Marston to get the 100% in the Undead Nightmare.
Right.
No, you have to complete it as the undead version of John Marston, which he has no speech. He's just like zombie growls kind of thing, which is pretty funny. And he kind of, when he's running, he's kind of like crippled as he's running along, which is pretty funny. But yeah, I did enjoy doing the platinum, mostly.
Mostly.
Very time consuming, more so than I thought originally, but I will not be platinuming Red Dead Redemption 2, because that's like an absolute nightmare.
Even more so,
you have to get the gold medal on all of the combat challenges, and there's 50 of them in the game, and some of them are ridiculous. Yeah, I'm not about that. Also, the Red Dead Redemption 2, you have to get all the multiplayer trophies as well. I'm pretty sure Red Dead Online, there's probably not a lot of people playing it right now. So, I mean, I did enjoy Red Dead Redemption 2, but not enough to go back and platinum it. I'll probably play through it again, but I don't think I'll platinum it. But I'm happy I got the platinum.
Yeah, well,
Red Dead Redemption 1. So that takes me to 164 platinums in total.
Very cool.
And that's 2 platinums so far this year. So, yeah, we'll see how the rest of the year goes. But, yeah. So that's Platinum Platinum Watch for this week. And that brings us on to our main subject, which is something that we quite fond of from our earlier years, and that's a focus on GoldenEye, the N64 version specifically.
Yes.
So tell me how you came about playing this game.
It's one of those things I honestly can't really remember. I do remember is that I wanted it with my N64.
Mm-hmm.
And I saved up all summer from working in a sports shop for £2.10 an hour.
Yep.
£2.10 an hour. Oh my God. Yeah, I've got 16.
Yeah.
And it took me all summer to save up the £250 that I needed to get the N64. And we didn't live close enough that I could just walk to a shop myself. I was relying on my mum taking me to go.
Yeah.
And one day after I saved up all the money, she came to me and was like, I'll take you to go and get your console if you get it with that Mario game, not that violent GoldenEye game.
And GoldenEye was the one you really wanted to play.
Yeah. So Mario 64 was the game I got with it.
Right.
Which I 100%ed.
Good game, though.
It's very good. Yeah. 100%ed it, got 120 stars. But I didn't get GoldenEye until a bit later.
Yeah.
And so I can't actually remember exactly how I did get my hands on GoldenEye in the end.
Right.
I think I quit my job in the sports shop after I'd saved enough money. You know, the summer was coming to a close and I didn't need to work there anymore. So I quit. And anyway, at some point or other, I picked up GoldenEye. And then all of a sudden, my mates who got PS1s, I finally had something to be jealous over the N64. I wanted to come round for us to play 4-player deathmatch.
Yeah.
And I remember that Oddjob was banned.
Yes.
Because he's too small and he's got a massive advantage. Like, if someone's playing Oddjob, you go around the corner and you shoot where you would normally get them in the head.
Yeah.
And because he's so short, you just shoot over his head and he would shoot you instead.
Brilliant.
So we just banned Oddjob. It was not fair for anyone to use him. No one could use him. No Oddjob. And that was about it for me, really. What's your memories about GoldenEye to start with?
So to start with, I can't remember exactly when I got it, because on its release, I was just moved down to London after doing some training for my first proper job after leaving uni.
Mm-hmm.
Can't remember if I got it early or I might have even got it in the summer of 98. So it was a bit later. I didn't get it on release, I don't think.
Right.
Because I remember the memory I've got of it is me and my flatmate John were living in South Harrow, like above a shop,
right?
That we'd rented, and I remember playing it with him. Then we played 2-player local on it because I had 2 N64 controllers,
right?
So that's my first memory of playing the game.
When you say 2-player local, you mean 2-player deathmatch?
Yes, 2-player deathmatch, yeah.
Because there was no co-op through the campaign for him.
No, there's no co-op, no, yeah. So we played deathmatch. But what we did with the campaign, we did it like you and Mike are doing, which was a console controller. Pass the pad. So he'd play one level, I'd play one level. So I remember doing that. And then I think I went and completed it on my own as well.
Mm-hmm.
But that was the kind of the first memories I had of playing it, and it follows the plot fairly closely of the film, I think.
Yeah, about as well as possible, I think.
For
1997 N64 first-person shooter game.
Because GoldenEye the movie actually came out in 1995.
Yes, the game released like 2 years after the film, which wouldn't happen now.
Which wouldn't happen now. You're right. But it was quite a big hit on Nintendo 64.
Yeah, I think it's like the fourth or fifth biggest selling N64 game ever.
Yeah, sounds right. I mean, it is enjoyable to play at the time. And, you know, there was nothing really like it on console.
I think it sold like 9 million copies.
Yeah.
And as we'll probably come on to, it had a massive influence on console first-person shooters.
Definitely. definitely. I mean, the PlayStation 1 was out at that time, mm-hmm. But it just wasn't getting as many first-person... didn't have as good first-person shooters, GoldenEye, definitely, especially with multiplayer.
Yeah, you'd need a multi-tap to do that on PlayStation. But I think, didn't GoldenEye basically inspire Steven Spielberg to come and speak to EA to do Medal of Honor?
I think so, yeah. That was one of his inspirations, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because Medal of Honor only came out, the first Medal of Honor came out, 99, I think it came out.
Yeah, that sounds right. So yeah. The first Medal of Honor is the one with the dancing dogs at the end, right?
That's right. Good game, that. I played that on PlayStation. I really enjoyed it.
My old flatmate, the Dave, absolutely loved that game and played the shit out of it.
It was really good. I did quite enjoy that Medal of Honor game. But yeah, the GoldenEye game is... I remember the most cool thing I remember about it was the music.
Yes.
And the watch that he's got on his wrist with like all the different... Because when you had the pause menu, it was all on his watch, which was really...
Yeah, and also, like you say, the music, the pause menu music was awesome.
Yeah. The music, I remember it being quite good. I did boot up the Nintendo Switch Online version yesterday just to see what it was like.
Yeah.
I couldn't control the fucking thing.
No, it hasn't got modern controls on Switch.
Oh, my God. It's like, how do I control this fucking game? I managed to get through the first level, though, thankfully. And I played the second level. And I'm sure this probably wasn't the original game as well. It must be because it's a port of the original game. But I got to the end of the second level, and you meet up with 006, who's played by Sean Bean in the film.
Yeah.
Alex Trevelyan, is that his name? Yeah, that sounds right. And I thought he was an enemy, so I started shooting at him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, Bond shows his true colours, you're a traitor, and starts trying to kill me. And I was like, what the fuck did I do?
Oh, you shot him.
I know. I didn't mean to. Oh, God, that was funny. That was a funny thing that you could do. That's quite clever for like a game that came out then. You don't really think about, you know, if normally... In games on PC, anyway, if you shoot like an NPC, they'll just not die or stare blankly at you. But this was an actual reaction to you shooting them, which I thought was quite funny. But yeah. I mean, they did pretty well to put it all on that cartridge, you know.
They did. Like, we need to touch on that Rare, who made this, the team, was it like 9 of them in the team? Something maybe 12?
Like yeah.
It's a very small team, anyway, that made GoldenEye.
Yeah.
And of mostly inexperienced, like students out of uni who'd not really made a game before, and Rare found all these people that had enough talent to put them together to make this game.
Yeah.
And also, it didn't have multiplayer until very, very late in development.
Yeah.
Like, one of them basically had this idea of multiplayer and threw it together at the last minute. And then, what's his name? Is it Ken Lobb? Something like that from Nintendo of America? Came over.
Yeah.
And just happened to come over at the right time, and the guy who made the multiplayer managed to show him this, like, come and have a look at this, and got him to play with three others on this little TV, because they had four of them playing Deathmatch.
Wow.
And he absolutely fell in love with it and was like, you have to put this in the final game. And I was like, well, it's not on the plan. There's not the budget. And he was like, I don't care. I'm going to make it happen.
Oh, cool. Yeah, he's so cool, that is. That's a really good story. Yeah. Yeah, that's excellent. I didn't realize it was such a small team that programmed it, only 12 people.
Yeah, it's just mad. It's absolutely mad. These days, you wouldn't get a game made with that small amount of people unless it's an indie. But even then, I think such a small team would have problems making an indie game that small. Also, Nintendo were very wary about the violence in the game.
Yeah.
And even thought about cancelling it at one point, like halfway through development.
Bloody hell. And
Shigeru Miyamoto was so unsure about the violence, he had this idea and sent this fax to Rare. And he was like, how about instead of Bond actually killing people, we have a segment at the end of the game where you see all of the soldiers that you shot in hospital, and you have a section where Bond walks down, I'm not kidding, walks along and shakes all of their hands to show that there's no hard feelings.
You have to admire the Japanese and their culture of non-violence, at least post-World War II.
Yeah. That's a very Miyamoto type story that he didn't want anyone to die, so he wanted them all to just get injured and not die, and Bond could make friends with them at the end of the game.
He'd spend about half an hour shaking all the soldiers.
Yeah.
Kill hundreds of soldiers in this game.
Yeah.
Oh, bless him.
And didn't they also have, like, for the multiplayer, they had something working where you could play as different versions of Bond?
Yeah.
You could play as the Pierce Brosnan one, who's actually in the game, and then also the Sean Connery, Timothy Dalton, and Roger Moore versions.
Yeah, that sounds right, yeah.
And from what I understand, they couldn't get the Bond, I was going to say group, you know, the people that own the Bond license.
Oh, Eon.
Yes. Yeah. They couldn't get them to sign off to have the other licenses in the game.
Right.
So the Rare people like played, because they had this version working before they had to like strip the other three out of the game. They all played like a multiplayer game where they picked a Bond each and played it the last time with the multiple Bonds shooting each other before they had to take it all out.
Oh, that would have been cool to see that, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a shame that they couldn't sign off on it. But I'm guessing it's because they didn't want to pay extra royalties to Sean Connery, Timothy Dalton and Roger Moore.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't the first James Bond game. There have been James Bond games before this. But I think this was, I'm fairly certain this was the first James Bond themed game I actually played.
Yes.
Because I mean, I mentioned it before on the podcast that I'm a James Bond fan, and I have played most of the James Bond games, not all of them, but most of them. That's why I'm looking forward to the new one that's coming out later this year in May. So that should be, was it James Bond 007?
First Light,
it's called, yes. So I'm looking forward to playing that. Anyway, this was the first Bond game that I played, and I was really, not shocked, but impressed, I would say, by, you know, the gadgets that you could use in the game. You could pick up different weapons from enemies who dropped them, like the AK-47. You had the Bond signature pistol with the silencer on it. You know, you could plant, in certain levels, you could plant smart bombs on the side of things and detonate them. And you could use the watch as a laser. There's one bit in the train where you got to escape when all you've got is the laser in your watch, and you use it to break open a trap door in the bottom of the train and escape. It's really, really well done, I think.
We should probably talk about the fact that for GoldenEye, first-person games are basically all the same as Doom, Wolfenstein, where it's like, get a key, use the keys, go through the door that you can't go through, and repeat until the game's over.
Yeah, pretty much.
And GoldenEye added in like having to play stealth in some sections, and all of these like additional objectives that if you play on the higher difficulties, you have to like go off in different directions off of the beaten path to go and meet these particular NPCs to fulfill these objectives.
Yeah.
Do all the extra objectives on the higher difficulties. And no one had really done stuff like that before. And it had a massive influence, I think, on games after that.
Definitely did. I mean, I can't think of the next kind of big first-person shooter game that came out after GoldenEye, but it's got to influenced games that came after it for sure.
The next one from Rare was Perfect Dark, which, of course, because Rare lost, they didn't have the Bond license anymore. EA snapped it up.
Yep.
And then so Rare did Perfect Dark, which was like their own IP, and unfortunately didn't sell anywhere near as well. Even though I think ultimately Perfect Dark is the better game.
Yep.
Of the two, I mean, I know the character's not as iconic as Bond. But also looking back at it now, like through through tinted lenses, really. But when I look back at the two games, Perfect Dark is the better of the two games, really. It's held up better, it's not dated as badly.
Yeah. I mean, GoldenEye was in that era where those kind of 3D games do not age well at all.
Yeah.
Same as like the Siphon Filter games on PlayStation, they've not aged well at all.
No.
Like I say, I played that little bit on Nintendo Switch Online. I purposely played it in handheld mode because I knew if I had it up on the big TV, it would just look awful.
Yes.
Because they did do like a quote-unquote remastered version of this, didn't they?
So they did. So what happened, they basically had the remaster / remake up and running on Xbox 360.
Yeah.
But I don't know if they couldn't get Nintendo sign off on it or exactly what happened. But for whatever reason, it never came out, even though it's basically finished.
Yeah.
And then Microsoft, knowing that it's Nintendo's IP, got to work on sorting out a deal with Nintendo that they could release an Xbox version as well as the Switch version. Like, so the Xbox version is basically a remaster or a remake.
Yeah.
It's got modern controls, 4K, better resolution, better frame rate, and it's got local multiplayer. And from what I understand, the one sort of caveat that Nintendo said was like, right, we want our version to be the only one that's got online.
Yeah.
So the Switch version basically is the original N64 version. It's not really tweaked or improved or remastered in any way. It's just got online added in, but you can't play online with randoms because Nintendo had to protect little Jimmy. So if you want to do online deathmatch, you have to have three people on your friends list who have all got it as well. Wow. And the four of you will play together because you know each other, but you can't play with randoms. Whereas the Xbox version has got all of these improvements, including like modern controls, like dual stick controls that the Switch version hasn't got, but it's not got online.
No, that's a shame, that, isn't it?
Yeah.
But
I think you can buy, there's a disc version, isn't there, that you can buy for Xbox?
I think there is a disc version, yes.
But then, of course, there isn't on the Switch. There's nothing physical you can buy. You can only play it via NSO.
Yeah.
On the N64 app.
That's right. That's the only way to play it.
I'm trying to remember, is this on the N64 Mature app or is it on the standard one?
It's on the standard one because you've got the... I've forgotten that you've got the three difficulty levels when you boot up the game. It asks you to choose one. What agent, advanced agent and 00 agent.
Yes.
I think that sounds something like that.
Yeah.
I just put it on agent. It's been like nearly 30 years since I played this game, so it doesn't play well at all. Which is a bit of a shame because I didn't realize how wildly the aiming on the right stick is. Like, literally, it's so floaty, it's unbelievable. Yeah. So
it feels very weird when you got used to modern games.
Definitely. You know, but Bond games have come and gone, but this one was like the, you know, the first proper way you play independently as Bond, you know, from Bomber's perspective, literally first-person perspective. Mm-hmm. It's even got the bit from the movie, the very first level, is where you have to fight your way through the dam, like, control area, and then jump off, or bungee jump off the dam.
Yeah.
Which is quite impressive.
Mm. Or was at the time for the N64.
It was at the time for the N64, for sure. Yeah. And to get it all on that cartridge, I mean, literally, because it's N64, switch it on instant access.
Yeah,
you know, you have to wait for loading times like on the PlayStation where it loads it from the CD kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I had a lot of fun with that game, and I'm glad we talked about it because it's one of those classics that you remember it being really good, and then you come to the modern age and you think it was really good at the time, but it just hasn't aged that well.
Hmm. I mean, it was seminal. And has such a massive influence on the entire industry and games in general.
Yeah.
But like you say, unfortunately, just through a modern lens in 2026, it really doesn't hold up.
No. And on a Nintendo console as well, who would have thought it?
Well, yeah, I think it was Nintendo that managed to get the rights. And this is why it took so long to release, because they had faith in Rare and the team. And I think they kept missing deadlines, and Nintendo's philosophy is more sort of get it right. The quality is what matters.
Yeah.
So they kept extending it as long as they could do to let them finish it.
Yeah. It shows, you know, because it is for what, you know, modern times hasn't aged that well. The original version, they really spent the time needed on it to make it a good game to play, or fun game to play, which is what it's all about, really, isn't it?
And it's kind of crazy that the multiplayer was a last minute addition, considering that pretty much for the most part, multiplayer is what everyone remembers this game for.
Yeah, very much so.
Late night, split screen, playing with friends. Even like people like putting like bits of cardboard, like, so you're playing on your little like 14-inch TV back then, and you've got bits of cardboard box that you use to like split up the screen.
Yeah.
Like to cordon off your little quarter.
Quarter of the screen.
So that other people can't cheat and look at your screen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've seen that a few times. Oh, it's funny. Ugh.
So I think, again, it's such a long time. I think I did finish this game.
I'm almost certain. I'm pretty sure I did, yeah.
Well, I'm pretty sure I only did it on the agent, like, lowest difficulty. I don't think I ever did it on the higher ones.
No. Well, I think me and John completed it on the middle difficulty, and then we tried it on the 00 and like past the pad, and that's what we did.
Cool.
Yeah, it took us because he was working and I was working, it took us a couple of weeks just to get through it, kind of thing.
Yeah,
just as and when we had the time. But yeah,
this one doesn't have co-op. Perfect Dark, they did add co-op into the campaign.
Yeah.
So you can play co-op through the whole campaign of Perfect Dark, which is pretty cool, as well as like the multiplayer deathmatch.
Yeah.
And then also Perfect Dark has got this crazy mode where one of you plays the bad guys.
Yeah.
And one of you plays Johnny Dark. And so when she shoots one of the enemies, you swap from whichever enemy you're playing at the time to another one.
Right.
And then like you've got a way, I can't remember exactly what you do, but you've got a way of winning, you know, come as the bad guys, as well as like finishing the level to win as Johnny Dark.
That's clever, that.
Yeah, so Rare really pushed things, what they could do in the N64.
And now they're relegated. I can't remember the last Rare game that came out, can you?
No, I mean, Microsoft paid $180 million for them. And in hindsight now, looking back on what's sort of come and gone since then, you can't sort of, well, for me anyway, you can't help but feel that Nintendo got the better of that deal because they got $180 million out of it.
Definitely.
And what have Microsoft's Rare done? They did Grab by the Ghoulies.
Did they do the Banjo-Kazooie?
So Banjo-Kazooie they did for Nintendo, but they did they did one Banjo-Kazooie on the Xbox. Was it Nuts and Bolts?
Nuts and Bolts, that's
which is not really the same as the original Banjo-Kazooie games.
No.
They did the remaster of Conker's Bad Fur Day, which is censored on the original Xbox.
That's right, yep.
And then when Microsoft launched the avatars, you know, like for use with the Kinect games and stuff like that on Xbox, I believe Rare did the avatars.
Yes.
You know, the Microsoft version of Mii's. And we've gone off topic a bit here, but...
Yeah.
what Rare have done recently, I don't know, they cancelled one of their games.
The big one that they've done recently was the Sea of Thieves.
Right, yeah.
That was their big one that they've done recently. And they also made a new version of Battletoads in 2020.
Yes. So Sea of Thieves is basically a live service game.
Pretty much. That's what they've been working on since 2018, really.
Yeah.
They
did have something else they had in the pipeline, but Microsoft cancelled it.
Yeah, I don't know what that was.
I forgot what it's called now.
Let's have a look on the list here. So the last one, Everwild?
Yes, that's it. Everwild is the one that's cancelled.
Yeah. Yeah, that got cancelled. But the one they did before Sea of Thieves was they did the Kinect stuff.
Yeah.
Kinect Sports.
And stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I don't know what they're working on currently other than Sea of Thieves, which is, like say, the live service game. But
yeah. But I think the majority of the staff from back then that worked on GoldenEye have all left.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would have
and
done
even the Stamper Brothers, who are the original two that started Rare, they're long gone, aren't they?
Long gone. Yeah, it's a different company now compared to what it was 30 years ago, you know. So,
The other thing we haven't mentioned, there's a brilliant documentary about GoldenEye and the making of it called Golden Era.
Yes.
And if you could put a link, if there's a trailer or something, you could put a link to that in the description, that'd be good. It's actually on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
And I believe it's included if you've got Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
There's no extra cost to watch Golden Era. It's like maybe an hour and a half. It's very much worth a watch if you've not watched it.
There may be a version of it on YouTube, maybe if we can find it. But if not, I'll put a link to like a trailer on YouTube or something.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, it is interesting to see. Like, I have watched that documentary. It's been a while since I watched it. But it's very interesting. As are all documentaries about video games, there's a whole video documentary channel called No Clip on YouTube. If anyone's interested in video documentaries, they're very good at what they do.
Yeah, I mean, if you've got another five, other than the five we talked about last time, we may do another episode of Video Game Documentaries Part 2.
Yeah, we may.
But don't hold your breath.
No. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I've got some that I didn't mention last time.
Yeah.
But I'm just not 100% certain right now if I've got five. I'll have to figure out whether I've got five to talk about, and you have to figure out if you got five, and then we'll go from there.
Go from there, definitely. Yeah. Sounds like a plan. But I think that brings us to the end of the focus on GoldenEye.
Right, yeah, cool.
So do you want to do the socials?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, we have got an email address that he says, quickly check in to make sure we've not actually got any emails. No, we haven't, which is 2guys3consoles. At yahoo.com, all words, no numbers.
Yep.
We have got a Discord, which is free to join.
Yep, links in the description.
Yeah. We have got an Instagram and Blue Sky, 2guys3consoles.
Mm-hmm.
And a Facebook group. Oh, yeah, we've got YouTube as well, which is audio only.
Yeah.
two guys, three consoles.
And the one we never mentioned, TikTok.
And TikTok that we don't mention because we don't post to it because we're too old.
Maybe we should stop mentioning it. Yeah.
My own personal Instagram is j_monster, and my personal Blue Sky is jmonster, no space, no underscore.
Good stuff. My personal Instagram is mleach26, and my personal Blue Sky is mattleach1. And that brings us to the end of episode 48. Thank you very much for listening, if you have done so. And we will see you on the next episode.
Yep. Bye, everybody.
Bye.